The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Perhaps today we can start by seeing if any of you have any questions. Some of you might have been practicing meditation at home and or have some questions from last time about the practice of mindfulness of the body or breathing as we've done so far, or the challenges you have. We can take a couple of minutes to hear from some of you, or some of you want to report how it's going at home, if it's going well or something. Yes, in the back. If you could wait for the mic, that way I can hear and other people can hear. And thank you. So it would be a green light to make it go on.
Got it. I was just wondering if your monkey mind ever quiets down.
Ah, the monkey mind. Well, there's in terms of practicing and maturing in this kind of practice, there's usually one of two things that happens. For most people who practice well, both happen at different times. One is, yes, it does quiet down. But it can take a while. Sometimes it can seem like grace that it's finally quieted down. How did that happen? And sometimes it's clearly a process of letting go, of coming back and relaxing, and slowly it calms down. It's best to think of that calming process as something that happens gradually. Some people have the idea that it's supposed to be instantaneous. You know, like they find the magic button in the mind and everything will get quiet. But it's more like it's a slow settling that happens. And yes, it can get very quiet in there. One of the cute things that can happen is it can get so quiet in the mind that there's a little whisper in the back of the mind that says, I'm not thinking anything right now. And you believe it, not recognizing that was a thought. One of the important things to say, you said the monkey mind, so yes, it can quiet down. The other thing that happens is that, which is also equally significant, maybe more significant, is that with time, people become less bothered by the monkey mind. So rather than, some people hate it, they're upset with it, some people love it and just can't wait to get involved in it. And after a while, we kind of feel like it can be there, we're not bothered by it, but we're also not in the sway of it, we're not caught by it. So there's a kind of a peaceful distance or a healthy kind of detachment from it, non-attachment from it, so not being bothered by it, and that helps a lot. Being bothered by your thinking just produces more thinking. That make sense? Thank you. Other questions or comments? There are more seats in here. Those of you in the outer hall, if you want to come in here and be closer, you want to see, you're welcome. You're welcome to stay where you are, but you also, there are chairs in here if you'd like to come in. Yes, please. We have two mics, so you can take.
Okay, so I close my eyes and then I don't know, because I've been trying for a long time, if I see like this black, I don't know if I'm looking at the, if my eyeballs are trying to look in my head or something. And so I do this and I do the breathing and...
You do what? You do?
I do the breathing in and out. And then I do find kind of in the, after I've let out the breath, there seems to be moments of nothing, and I like that, so I try to go with that. But then I get this really feeling of like peace, like just really peaceful, feeling good. And then I think, is my mind doing that? Is my mind inventing that, making me think I'm doing it? So I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. I don't know.
Well, I think it's normal enough when someone has a new experience in meditation to have some reflection, some thinking about it, some wondering about it. A classic experience is that people can get very peaceful, very subtle. There can be sometimes levels of bliss or joy that can arise in meditation. Mm-hmm. And then people, but it requires the mind being kind of still and quiet.
Yes.
But because it's so new, this good feeling, the mind gets excited. And
yes.
You think, oh, this is great! And then it's gone.
Exactly.
And so I think for you, you know, it sounds like a new experience. And it's natural for the mind then to be reflective, to think about it and wonder about it. I'm glad you see it. To see what's going on is mindfulness. And then I think probably my guess is very quickly you're not going to be so excited. You're going to realize you don't have to think about it or figure it out. You can just coast along.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? If everybody said, because some people have hearing assistant devices, and so this allows them to hear. Green light.
Yes. Okay. I was wondering if there were any personality types or temperament styles that didn't seem to be able to meditate or effectively meditate. I don't know how you would say that.
I don't think so.
That you know of?
I don't think so. It depends a little bit on the answer on what you call meditation. But I've known people, for example, who have teachers of this practice who have attention deficit disorder. There's a couple of them, very, very prominent teachers who have it. And so they can't concentrate in the way you usually think meditators concentrate. But they have figured out other ways to have the meditation work. One of my friends who has this issue, he says he's been meditating for over 40 years. He's a big part of his life. He loves it. But what he does is that he meditates in very short bursts. And for him, that's very effective. And it works with his attention deficit mind. But in terms of personality types, I don't think there's any differences. It's a common observation that meditation communities, where that's a big emphasis like here, tend to attract introverts. But there are extroverts who are great meditators. They just don't hang around, maybe. You know, in communities which are kind of quiet, maybe. Sometimes certain communities, meditation communities, it tends to be like it's easier for some personality types to come, like the introverts, right? It might be easier to go to a place like here. And if you're a very extravagant extrovert, and everyone's being really quiet, it might seem a little disharmonious. So that's it's possible, but it's not meant to be that way. In terms of meditation, I think it doesn't matter. Everyone who meditates will sooner or later have to encounter their personality and some of the challenging aspects of their personality. And then one of the important things to do is to be a meditator is not to take your personality personally, but rather just take it as this is the material you have to work with, and this is what you have to compost. This is what you have to kind of learn to find your inner strength, the strength of mind that can be present, that can be compassionate, that can be mindful of what's going on. And everyone will have their issues, and some issues. Now, in Buddhism, there's in certain kinds of ancient Buddhism, they have this idea of three personality types. And it's pretty primitive, but, sometimes in Buddhist circles they bandy it about. The three personality types are the greed type, the hate type, and the deluded type. So, so some people are more oriented towards greed, some people more towards hate. So there's some idea in the ancient text that being greedy is a little bit more helpful for meditation, but if you want to progress fast, it's better to be hateful, because then you say no. But it's more dangerous to be a hate personality because you can create more harm in the world than a greed type. So you asked about personality types. That's a little bit of Buddhist lore. I don't know if it helps you. You have something more specific you want to ask that helps me understand? I went on and on without.
I think you answered it
well enough. Sorry if I went on non-occupational hazard, being a teacher. Okay, so one more, and then we'll do a meditation. He was going to answer. I'll give you two more. Green light on the side.
Okay. So I was wondering if you have any tips for... the first week I was actually... meditating pretty much every day for about 20 minutes, but then I just find it difficult to keep doing it. And every day I often, you know, just feel like, oh, well, I don't have time this morning to do it. I don't know if you have any suggestions for to make it.
You know, one of the fascinating things I've done is that when I feel really harried and like I don't have enough time, I'll stop and meditate for 15 minutes. And then amazingly, the most common experience is I have more time afterwards. It's counterintuitive, right? It doesn't make, not logical. But, you know, time is something to do with the mindset. The mind understands a construct. And we have a lot of things to do, and we can get kind of claustrophobic in the little mind of ours. So sometimes meditating creates more space. And a friend of mine calls it breathing room. So, you know, that's kind of a nice term for, you know, meditating on the breath, creating a breathing room, creating much more space. And if there's more space in the mind, then time is easier too. So the other thing is, but one of the important things around this, which may be hard to do just for someone just beginning an intro class, but it helps if you really set your intentions well and strong. To really be clear that this is important, this is valuable, you really want to try it out, and that the experiment of trying to do this for this 5-6 weeks is important enough that it overrides all the other, enough of the other pulls that you're willing to try the experiment and see what it does. And then if it isn't important enough, because, and you really reflected deeply, you know, contemplative life, reflecting deeply is an important part of a spiritual life. So reflecting deeply about your values, what's important for you, what you believe is an important part of this. And that interface between your motivation to meditate and the pulls not to meditate is a fascinating area to explore. And it's a way to understand yourself better and to question yourself better. What are your values? What's important for you? And if you really do some deep reflection and it seems like your meditation, the meditation has no real value in your life, it's more important to do other things, chuck it. You know, don't do it. You know, but only do it if you feel like it has some value. But for those of you who are new, sometimes, you know, you need to give it a while to really find out what the value is. And, you know, if you do it regularly for 2 months, I'm hoping you start seeing some real value and say, this is really worth it. If you do it for 6 months, you'll see a lot more. One of the interesting ways of running this experiment is to meditate for something like 6 months, long enough, pretty much every day, six times a week maybe, and then stop for a couple of weeks and then see the difference. Because sometimes what happens is the benefit of meditation develops slowly, so slowly, incrementally, that you might not see it day by day. But if you do it 6 months and then you stop, then you say, wow, that made a big difference. And then you want to start again. So I don't know if I addressed your concern well enough, but for now, that's what I say. So maybe one more, Green light should be on.
I am figuring out more and more how to create a good space to sit.
Oh, yeah.
I got the timer on my iPhone, uh-huh. And the first time the little buzz from an email coming in happened in the middle.
Oh.
And so I figured to turn on Do Not Disturb while I have the timer going. Uh-huh. Another occasion, my husband walked into the room, even though I had the door shut, and asked me a question. And I think I kind of gave him a calm little answer, and he went away. But I live with one other person, and I know a lot of people have households of 3 and 4 and more. I wondered what you thought about interruptions and stuff like that.
Two things about it. Number of things I can say. One is that in this particular meditation practice, we don't believe in interruptions. It's just something else to include as part of the mindfulness, part of the practice. So, you know, if your husband comes in, then you might have a reaction, then your practice is to notice the reaction. Or if you don't have any reaction, your practice is to just be mindful of a husband, and mindful of questions. And part of the value of this practice is that interface between the experience that's happening and our relationship to it. So if you're meditating or doing anything and someone so-called, you know, interrupts you, notice what happens inside of you. Do you get angry? Do you get excited? You're delighted to be interrupted from your boring task? Are you, you're indignant? Are you self-righteous? Are you discouraged? What happens to you? What's your common strategies? And is it necessary to have any strategy at all? Can you just be present in an open, relaxed way? Say, oh, husband, or whatever it might be. So the idea that something's interrupting you when you're meditating is, we try not to think that way. Or also, there's no distractions also. So that's one approach. Another approach is to, some other time when you're not meditating, talk to your husband and explain to him that this is actually important for you, and could he please respect this period of time? And maybe before you meditate, you say, anything you want to ask? For I'm going to go meditate. Anything you need to check in about before I go? Because I would prefer if you didn't stop, you didn't came in and ask me questions. And maybe then if you ask nicely, and if you ask nicely and he still interrupts you, then you have other issues to look at. So, okay. So let's do a meditation. So take an alert and comfortable posture. That was very nice. Thank you. So, and if you're sleepy, which is often the case at the end of a day like this, you might sit up a little bit straighter. So there's a little more energy for you. And then gently close your eyes. And then with your eyes closed, see if you can gently let go of looking at anything. The tendency of the eyes to look. Letting the eyes rest in their sockets. In the beginning of a sitting, it can be helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths as a way of connecting to your body. The deep in-breath is a reminder that for the duration of the meditation, the practice is to be here, in this body at this time. And the fuller exhales are a time to let go, to relax, to settle in. And then letting your breathing return to normal. We make no special effort to breathe any special way. Just let your breath breathe itself. In the beginning of a meditation, it's also helpful to scan the body to see if there's any places that you can relax, soften. Perhaps the forehead, around the eyes. Perhaps the jaws can be softened. Some people find it helpful to drop the mouth open so the teeth come apart, lips come apart, and then float the teeth back together. It might be possible to soften around the shoulders and the shoulder blades, especially as you exhale. softening the belly, gently letting the belly hang forward or sink down. And then within your body, as part of your bodily experience, become aware of how the body is aware of breathing, how it senses, feels, experiences of breath, breathing. You might feel the movement of your belly or of your chest or of the air going in and out through your nostrils. Or all of the above. And there's a rhythm in breathing in and breathing out. There are different sensations that come into play in the body for the in-breath and the out-breath. Let yourself kind of bring into focus the body's experience of breathing. Seeing if you can linger in that experience of breathing. Hang in there, linger. Hang out with breathing in and breathing out. And then gently, as you exhale, see if you can let go of what you're thinking about. Perhaps the idea of letting your thoughts float away as you settle in. Relax, let go as you exhale. It can be helpful to very gently, so whisper in the mind, say the word in as you inhale and out as you exhale, or rising as the chest rises, falling as it falls. It's a way of helping you to stay present for the experience of breathing, reminding you to let go of other thoughts and concerns. And if something is happening that makes it difficult for you to be with your breathing or to be present, see if you can clearly acknowledge that. Clearly be aware that what's happening that makes it difficult. But see if that clear acknowledgement can be relaxed, easeful, not in conflict. The practice of mindfulness is to see clearly what's happening. Whatever is acknowledged, see if you can begin again with the breathing. Always beginning again, whenever you've lost the rhythm of breathing. Come back. So now, at this point in the meditation, you can, for a little bit here, let go of the focus on breathing. See, in a sense, to step back and notice how you're feeling. Notice what your emotional state is, your mood. Perhaps an attitude which is strong. It could be subtle. It could be that you're quiet and calm. You could be impatient. You could be eager or bored. Restless. Could be a strong desire operating or a strong aversion. There could be confidence and ease, a peacefulness, sadness or happiness. Notice how you're feeling, your mood, your emotional state. And then experiment to see if you can be aware of it in a relaxed way. If you can be clearly aware of how you're feeling, sense it, be present for it, acknowledge it, as if it's completely okay to be this way. Your job is to see it clearly, to know it clearly. And that's it. Not being for or against it. To know clearly how you're feeling without being what you're feeling, without identifying with what you're feeling. It's okay to feel what you do, but then let yourself be mindful of what it is. And then a second step before we end this sitting is, if it's possible, whichever way you're feeling right now, is that feeling somehow expressed or most clearly felt in some part of your body? What part of your body, what section of your body seems to be most, have the energy of this feeling, or it's activated by this feeling, or the home for this mood or emotion? Is it mostly in your torso, or mostly in your head, or in your hands, in your legs? Where do you feel it? And then for about a minute here, see if you can gently but fully feel this part of the body, mindfulness of the body, of the place that seems to be the home or the base for how you're feeling. It's okay to be this way. Just feel it. Make space for it in the body. But feel that part of the body. And then for the last minute of this sitting now, come back to your breathing. And for 1 minute, just kind of settle into your breath again. Take refuge in your breathing. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, deep breaths, feeling your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. One of the analogies that our tradition uses for meditation is that of a pool of water, like a forest pool, that's muddy. And because it's been stirred up, the animals have been swimming in it or running around, the kids have been jumping in and out or whatever. And so all the mud's been stirred up and you can't see the bottom of the pool because it's all muddy. Now, if you wanted the mud to settle out, you wouldn't go get a stick or a paddle and stir it even more because that just keeps the mud swirling and in solution. What you do is you leave it alone. And if you leave it alone, then the water, the swirling slows down. And the mud is heavier than the water will settle in the pool and the pool becomes clear. So sometimes it works that way with the mind, meditation, that we want to learn how not to stir it up anymore, how to add anymore, react anymore to what's going on, but to leave things alone. And in leaving things alone, then the mind has a capacity, has ability to relax and let go. In fact, the only reason why the we're not relaxed and peaceful is because we're constantly renewing the agitated mind. We're constantly involved in our thoughts, our concerns, our reactions to what's going on. And so the mind never has a chance to let down. Like it's constantly chattering. But so part of meditation is to step back. It's okay to chatter. It's okay, whatever's going on. But to leave it alone. Step back. And so one of the ways that we do that in mindfulness meditation is to always come back to the idea that mindfulness is clearly seeing what's there. That's all. Just clearly recognizing that's what's going on. And that is very much, very different than how many people relate to themselves, their experience, their world, where there's often a reaction. We're for or against the experience. We want to do something. We want to manipulate it. We want to make it better. We want to understand it. We want to fix it. We want to get away from it. It's always something going on. But the idea in this tradition, this meditation, is that the clear seeing or the knowing, just being aware, this is how it is meant to just kind of leave it alone, but with clear seeing. Not leave it alone and be blind and ignorant to what's going on, but to be awake to what's happening. But in that being awake to what's happening, just leaving the pond alone. So it's a training to do that because of how habitual the reactivity is. So an important part of human life is our emotional life. And different people have very different relationships to their emotions. There's no, you know, standard way to be. Some people, for example, for whatever reason, have very strong emotions. And that emotions are a huge part of their life. Other people seem to be very even keeled and seems like there's very little emotion going on. Some people are very emotional or very even and seemingly very little going on because of just their personality, and some of them because there's some kind of something going on that's more interesting than personality. Some people are shut down. Some people are really attached to their emotional life or to what goes on. Some people identify strongly with it. Some people hardly identify with it all. So, but one way or other, emotions are one of the things that can arise when you sit to meditate. And it's to be expected that there be some emotion, some mood, some feeling state that might be there. The practice of meditation is to see that clearly, to include that as part of the meditation in this way. We continue to focus on breathing as the foundation until the emotions or the mood or the mental state becomes strong enough that it becomes, there's a pull and push, there's a kind of a tension or kind of, it's difficult to stay with the breath because this emotion is there. And so then we let go of the breath entirely and try to bring a calm, relaxed attention to see clearly, to recognize clearly, this is how I am right now, this is how I'm feeling. As we do that, we learn about the interface between us and our emotions. The interface meaning are the way we relate to it, the judgments, the ideas, the, oh, this is great, finally I have some joy in my meditation, and then we grab it by on the neck and then it disappears. Or we feel, we might feel sad in meditation, and we grab the sadness and let it pull us down, oh, poor me. So we get involved with it. It's a world of difference between just recognizing joy and seeing it and kind of leaving the pond alone, or seeing sadness and just recognizing and leaving it alone, than there is to have joy or have sadness and get involved or be pushed around by it or react to it. Does that make some sense? So before I go on with some more instructions around how to be mindful of emotions, I'd be curious to hear from some of you. When I turned your attention to notice how you're feeling in this meditation, what was that like? What happened to you when you brought that into the field of awareness?
I had quite an experience doing the breathing and to get in touch with how one was feeling. And I thought, I'm annoyed. And then all of a sudden it was like, no, I'm not. I'm not annoyed at all. I'm actually feeling really good. And it went into my cheekbones, uh-huh. Or, right here. And I just sort of felt all soft inside, like a sponge or something like that.
And so
it was just funny.
So the annoyance was just like a habit to think you were annoyed?
I thought I was annoyed.
But you thought you were annoyed.
Yes.
But there was no real evidence for it once you looked.
Correct.
that's fun. How many times we carry around a policy, I'm this way, without having looked to check it out? Great. That's fascinating. So now maybe this teach you it's good to take a second look. Someone else. Also, it was very nice that you reported you felt the sense of well-being in your torso and all that. So what do you think for you is the difference between knowing you're feeling good, but then really feeling the place in the body where it resides?
The difference?
Yeah, do you have any say? It's not a test, but any thoughts about the difference for you?
I just felt more comfortable.
Mm.
I think that I was more aware of myself and being able to say, well, that's good, and that's just how it is.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you. So I'm not sure this is what you meant, but sometimes if you feel it in your body, whatever it might be, it just becomes simpler. It becomes easier to be with what's happening. Someone else? Yes, there's the other mic.
When you guided us to feel or to experience how we were feeling, I noticed that I was feeling anxiety or anxious, and I noticed it in my chest and also the way my heart was beating. And I found it challenging to experience that in a relaxed way because uh-huh. it seemed like those were kind of opposites.
Yes.
So I just kind of stayed with that confusion and throughout the rest of the meditation.
Great. And so what was that like for you, just stay with the confusion?
I tried not to fight it. Uh-huh. I just sort of told myself, well, I'm not really sure how to do that, and I just sort of let that be.
So you let it be. And was that different than how you normally be with it? Is this a kind of usual way for you? Or
I'm normally not aware of that.
You're normally not aware of the anxiety.
Right.
So that's one of the things that can happen in meditation, especially when you're directed to notice your feelings, is people are surprised by what they there. Sometimes people are not so in touch with their emotions and feelings. And we're overriding it, we're too busy, we're thinking about things. But they get quiet sometimes in surprise to discover what's underneath things and what's really kind of the kind of the foundation of our mood and stuff. Sometimes it's surprising because it's difficult. And sometimes surprising because it's beautiful. You know, it's very nice. And so anyway, thank you. How long the meditation was? It was 20 minutes. So if you can pass the mic down there. Thank you. Were you surprised? Was it seem extremely long or very short? Or it was longer. It was probably longer than last time, a little bit, by a few minutes. Yes?
Today I did something and it felt like it was difficult to do, but I decided to let go of the struggle in my mind. And so... it was relatively easier than I thought it would be to take this step. And where I've been feeling it as I started grounding from tonight was in my stomach. And the feelings that have been coming up for me is a little bit of grief and some fear of life. And I feel like my work now is just to be compassionate.
Nice. So in our tradition, it's a beautiful thing to be compassionate. To simply watch and be present is a form of compassion, a kind of caring. So sometimes compassion is a little more active. It's kind of a love and acceptance. And sometimes it takes a little bit more form of letting the pond be, just being present in a clear way. And so what's the difference for you think, between feeling it in your body, the grief and not feeling it there?
My mind starts becoming more active.
When?
About when I am deciding what to do.
Oh.
And when I can actually went on a retreat and my mind kind of exploded and fell into my heart. And at that point, you know, I feel like I'm
So would it be accurate to say for you that when you feel it, the emotion, the sadness, the grief in your body, you're less likely to be up in your thinking mind, trying to figure it out or solve it or react to it? And so in some ways that allows for compassion or care because you're actually closer to the heart of it, closer to what's actually feeling. There can be a strong tendency when we think about and problem solve and react and try, we're actually kind of removed from the experience. Thinking can remove us from the direct experience of something in our being. And so part of the function of meditation is to help us not to see things through the filter of our thoughts, but rather to see it directly or feel it directly. It becomes a different animal. And one of the interesting things to realize is that some emotions, some reactions, are kept fueled by what we're thinking. And if there's a different feelings and different emotions that can happen when we stop the thought fuel to keep going. Next week we'll talk about thoughts and how to practice with thoughts, but for now. So a very important part of mindfulness of emotions is to first recognize that we're having an emotion, there's a feeling or a mood or a mind state that's operating. And sometimes that's obvious. If it's not obvious, don't worry about it. Just continue with your breathing. But if it becomes obvious that you're grumpy or irritated or you're sad or you have grief or you feel joy or you feel something, you know, just giddy or something, many things you can feel, when it becomes strong and obvious, then, you know, the first task is to recognize that this is what's happening. And to know that that's part of the meditation, to have the simple recognition, this is happening. And then it can be really helpful to notice how it feels in your body, to drop into your body. And they say that every emotion has some expression or manifestation in your body. And in fact, if you wouldn't know what you were feeling unless there was a bodily expression of it. So sometimes it's really obvious. You know, people talk about fear in their belly or anger in their heart or, you know, different things. Restlessness in their hands or legs or calm maybe or, you know, in their brain or mind or love in their hearts, different places. And so the idea is to find that. And some people will say, well, this is such a foreign idea to find it in their body that they kind of say, well, it's everywhere. And sometimes I say, well, is it in your little toe? And they say, well, not my little toe. Is it in your ankle? Not my ankle. Then that usually they say, oh, no, it's in my torso. And then I'll say, is it in the front of your torso and the back of your torso? And many people say, well, it's kind of the front half. Now, is it, you know, the full length of your torso, or is it, well, actually, it's more kind of in the chest. And then so we kind of begin helping them to find it, because if you're not used to doing this, it can just, it has no location, because it's always just been, just been, right? And so here we're asked to actually begin localizing what part of the body is active or energized or houses the feeling that we're having. And this interesting idea that every emotion has some physical corollary. Part of the value of doing this is that the body is not thinking. The body is not a story. And often, it's when we get caught up in story making, analysis, commentary, judgments, lots of thinking about it, discursive thinking about it, it doesn't really help us to be present. It doesn't help the pond to settle, to leave the pond alone. And it just adds more fuel, adds more stirring it up. And it can seem extremely counterintuitive, actually it can seem for some people very disorienting to stop reacting with our thinking mind, making stories, because that's the habit of a lifetime to do that. So it can be, you should realize that sometimes it takes a little transition to learn that. Some people find that it's a relief, a tremendous relief right away. Wow, I mean, I don't have to think about things, I don't have to solve things, I don't have to fix anything. I don't have to prove myself. I don't have to be someone. I can just be. And so this idea of just being, leaving the pool alone, letting it settle. So your body, what you're experiencing in your body is a very important foundation for that, or support for that. And that's why last week the instructions were mindfulness of the body, because the more you can learn how to be mindful of the body, the easier it is then to work with emotions and be with emotions. So as we're feeling the emotions and feeling them in the body, part of what we're trying to do is to be okay with the emotions. And okay in the sense that we're not reacting, we're not for or against it. Just kind of, sometimes we talk about acceptance of it or allowance of it as it is. And for some people that's a radical idea, that you can just allow, it's okay to have whatever emotions you have. And this is one of the qualities of this meditation practice, is you're allowed to have any emotion whatsoever under the sun. You're allowed, when you do this meditation, without any shame, without any negative judgments, you're allowed to sit here and have murderous rage. Isn't that great? I mean, how many places in the world can you go, it's okay to sit there and have murderous rage? It's safe because you're not going to move. You're meditating. And so it gives space to what you're feeling. You're allowed to feel what you're feeling. Some people have a lifetime of pushing away, of ignoring, of denying, of not getting to know their emotions. Some people have a lifetime of holding on to certain ones. Here we're just being very simple, but you're allowed to have your emotions. You're allowed, but there's no need to celebrate them. There's no need to get involved in them. There's no need to make conclusions about them. There's no need to validate some. And the most radical thing, which is there's no need to identify with them, which means don't take them personally, don't define yourself by them. I'm feeling depressed, therefore I'm a depressed person. And I better, no one ever better see me as being a depressed person because I shouldn't be a depressed person. Or I'm feeling peaceful in meditation, I hope they notice. You know, I'm at a Buddhist center and you're supposed to be peaceful. I finally, you know, maybe they'll give me a badge. You know, I'm the peaceful one.
So what do you say instead?
So what do you say when you feel depressed or you feel joy or peace?
Yeah.
So what you say is you say, now I feel depressed. There's depression. Or now there's sadness. Or now there's joy. You can even just use a single word. Sometimes it's helpful to name an emotion with a single word. Joy, sad. There's something very powerful about the simple one-word naming of an emotion. It helps a disidentification. It helps kind of acknowledge that it's there. It helps leave it alone, some people find. Calm, relaxed, it's one word. Many years ago, I was feeling off. Like something was off. I couldn't quite get it. And so I lay down on a couch. And so because I do this practice, I said, okay, where do I feel this offness? What's going on here? You know, off is not a technical emotional word, but that was the best I could come up with. I felt off. And so I said, where does that feel? So I took a while, I scanned through my body, and I felt somehow at the center of this feeling of offness was in my chest. And as I stayed there and felt what was going on in my chest, I felt that as I exhaled, I couldn't exhale all the way. My chest was held out in some way. And so I stayed with that feeling of being held out for a little while until I recognized, oh, I'm not off, I'm depressed. And as soon as I recognized there was depression, the depression released. I mean, not the depression, the chest released, and I could breathe more freely. Now, it's no way, you know, most of the time going to be that easy. But it's, I use that example, just an example of that this the simplicity of recognizing what's there and naming it and feeling it in the body can be very, very helpful.
So that you're not saying what's causing the depression, you're not asking yourself those questions.
Good question. Yes, that's right. So
trying to solve it.
Because you're not trying to solve it, you're not trying to ask the questions, why am I feeling this way? Sometimes certain emotions, certain ways of being, it's useful to ask those questions, but not in meditation. Meditation is actually a very different place than you know, analyzing, probing in, why am I feeling this, what happened to me. Sometimes that's neurotically done and not useful, but sometimes it's very useful to do that kind of analysis. But meditation is a radically different approach, and where we need to learn the art, the ability to let go or put aside for the time being the tendency to want to figure something out or understand where it comes from. Because when you're trying to figure something out or trying to understand where it's come from, you're involved in thinking. And then you're paddling, you know, your paddle is stirring up the pond. So just, it's okay. So it's nice to think of meditation as a time you're allowed to be just the way you are. You're allowed to be grumpy. You're allowed to have murderous rage. You're allowed to be joyful, peaceful, happy, anything. And actually and if you keep doing this over time, it's a radical thing to do, to have this place, almost like a sacred place, where you have space, breathing room, lots of space for feeling what's going on. So now I'll give you my analogy I like to give. Hopefully you like it too. If you go into a small little elevator that's meant for two people, and you go in, you're all by yourself, how nice. And then right after you comes like these three big bursting giants of people, you know, and like your nose goes into their belly button. And you know, but that's okay, except that you're crowded in there, you can hardly breathe, and they have ketchup down their shirts, and, you know, like slobs and you're like, you feel so claustrophobic, right? In that kind of setting, it might be hard to love humanity. you know, but the four of you get off the elevator and open up this huge cathedral, like huge, huge, beautiful cathedral, like room, space, and beautiful stained glass windows and light coming in. And they all of you spread out across this huge, huge floor, and you could hardly see them far away, maybe. And then it's easy to love humanity. So, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but the idea being that we can be claustrophobic in our own minds, where we can give lots of space. In a sense, what meditation is about is not changing how we are and not trying to fix how we are, but making lots of space. And that changes the whole game. But if you're writing every little thought and every little concern, every little feeling is so meaningful, so significant, and you know, this I have to, you know, I'm being defined by this, it's claustrophobic, it's very hard to be with. So this is a meditation is a place where you're allowed to be as you are. It's not easy to do that, but that's the practice is to learn how to do it. It takes time. Make some sense? I'll give you one other analogy. And that is, comes from the Buddha. He said that, he was talking to some people like you perhaps, and he said, if someone, archer comes along, strings his bow and arrow and shoots another person, will that hurt that person? They struck by the arrow. Oh yes, that hurts. That'll hurt. And the Buddha then said, well, if the archer then came along and shot a second arrow at that person, would that hurt even more to be hit by a second arrow? So the right answer was yes. And the Buddha said, well, sometimes in life, you'll receive a first arrow from life, from what goes on. But the second arrow is always your doing. So if I'm walking down the sidewalk here, I could stub my toe against the cracked sidewalk. That just happens. I mean, that's the first arrow. The second arrow would be, Gil, you're a klutz. You're an embarrassment to all walking people. That's the second arrow. And then, Gil, you no good, lousy meditation teacher. You should know better than having a second arrow. You're not supposed to do that. And then there's a third arrow. And then I'm embarrassed. Look at all these arrows I have, and I hope no one's noticing, and I feel so embarrassed. This is terrible. And then it's the fourth arrow, and then this is hopeless. I've been doing this for a long time, and I can't figure this out, and my mind is so difficult, and I have all these reactions, and I have a bad attitude towards myself, and this must be because of my parents, and what happened when I was a kid, and my high school, and I got to figure this out, but figuring it out, I can't do on my own, and I need to go to therapy, and but therapy is so expensive, and I can't get a good job. I can never get a good job, and it probably has to do with that first boss I have, and I got to figure something else besides therapy. I've heard that meditation really helps. And I heard that it's cheap. And then I pause for a minute and I said, oh, I am meditating. The mind can go into these generations of reactivity, generation of arrows and arrows and arrows. And what's sad is sometimes people spend a whole lifetime endless arrows of reactivity to what's going on. You know, not only five generations of it, but thousands of generations that what goes on. And then it's even worse sometimes because then people's multiple arrows attack each other, you know. And the meditation practice is a radical practice of learning again to stop the arrows. And if you can only stop the arrow at the 114th generation, celebrate that. That's good. Because if you don't, you probably add the 115th arrow. Just let it be. It's okay. It's okay. And slowly, as mindfulness gets stronger, you'll begin to notice and catch your reaction, your response earlier, and you'll be able to leave it earlier and earlier and earlier until finally you can just be the first, you just stub your toe. Oh, I stubbed my toe. Or, oh, I'm sad. That's just sad. No second arrow to sadness. Just let it be. And so the reactivity of the mind begins to quiet down. In terms of emotions, mindfulness of emotions, Buddhism distinguishes between two kinds of emotions. There's those emotions that represent reactivity, and those emotions that represent more a heartfelt response to the situation. So reaction would be, there's strong feelings of aversion or desire. I want that, I don't want that. And all the things that arise out of that are reactive. Responsive would be to be relaxed and at ease and let the heart feel what's happening and let something bubble up from the heart in a relaxed way. And in Buddhism we say things like joy, love, compassion are responses that bubble up from the heart. Afflictive emotions, those emotions that tend to hurt, tend to arise out of reactivity. So the practice of mindfulness is partly a training to learn to recognize clearly what's here. As we recognize and see what's here, to learn how to feel it and be present for it, and then also to learn how to not react to it, to let it be. It's okay. So it's okay to be who you are. It's okay to be. When you come to meditate, it's all okay. But just make room. Just recognize it's there. Feel it in your body. And in doing that, step back from stirring up the pool. Step back from holding everything so tight as being so important and so crucial. Make lots of room. It's okay. Try to be aware of what's going on. Does it make some sense? So, you want to try it again? Yeah, you've been sitting now for a long time, so please stand up and stretch and shake out your legs. And so it's interesting that one of the things that interfere with meditation is if you think you know what's supposed to happen, or if you have an idea of what's supposed to happen, because then you might be manipulating or fixing or expecting what's happening. If you do this practice for a while, my hope is what you'll learn is that your body, your heart, your inner life knows much better than you know what needs to unfold. And to learn to trust, to relax and let go, and allow the inner unfolding to take its course, as opposed to trying to fix something or make something better or push something away. And the question someone asked was, she'd learned that she could, if she had feeling something, she could breathe through it and make it bigger and bigger and kind of make it fade away by breathing through it. And now that's a nice skill to have, to breathe with something and make it go away. But maybe there was something more important that feeling needed to do than go away. Sometimes the difficult feelings we have represent something very important that needs to be processed or unfolded or deepened inside of us. And if we're always trying to fix ourselves, always feeling, trying to make ourselves feel better, we don't respect the profound nature of our inner life to process and work through what's going on. Sometimes, not always, sometimes depression, sometimes anger, sometimes fear, for example, are the doorway into something really important and deep for us that can unfold if we don't fix it, if we don't try to get away from it. So to second guess what's supposed to happen might interfere with this natural process of unfolding of what the body knows what needs to happen. Okay? So, taking a meditation posture that's upright, posture that expresses a little bit of alertness, gently closing your eyes, then without further ado, check in with yourself now and see how you're feeling. Could be subtle, a mood, a mental state. Could be that you're tired. Could be you're intrigued, you're confused, you're thoughtful, you're calm, impatient, restless, content. And it might not, you might feel something, but it has no label or clear understanding. It might just be a feeling, a very vague sense of being off or being something. And might it be possible to find some place in the body where this feeling is most centered? And are there ways in which you react or make stories or send arrows towards what you're feeling? Do you get caught by it or think about it? Do you identify with it? Do you have an attitude of being for and against it? Do you believe it? What would it be like just to be aware of it and allow it to be? Allow it to be, and as you allow it to be and be aware, to make space for it to stay as it is, if it wants to, and we'll make space for it to unfold or change, if that's what it wants to do. And then if you like, now bring into focus the experience of breathing. Perhaps starting by a couple of a little bit deeper breaths than usual to make this, to establish the connection. Letting your feelings, your emotional state kind of recede to the background, so that in the foreground is the simple experience of breathing in and breathing out. The life-giving experience of breathing in and breathing out. And then you can continue with your breathing. Try to linger there, hang out there with breathing in and breathing out. Let go of your thoughts whenever you can. And if sensations in your body become stronger, you can then do mindfulness of the body. If some emotion or attitude or desire or aversion becomes stronger, you can do mindfulness of emotion. Simple recognition of what's happening. Feeling it in your body. Making space and allowing it to be there. Letting go of what you're thinking about. Or letting your thoughts recede to the background. Noticing if there are any second arrows. And then to end the sitting, you take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And you, when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So one of the interesting areas that sometimes get overlooked when people meditate is if you find an impulse when you're meditating to move your posture, to adjust your legs, some part of you, or open your eyes or something, is wait a moment before you do it and bring yourself to feel more fully what that impulse is about in terms of what's the emotion behind it, is there a reaction, is there a response, what's happening there. Just so it's another place to notice the mindfulness of emotions or mind states. And sometimes if you do that, you find you don't have to move because it was mostly the mind state was, you know, pushing you around. And once you recognized it, it didn't have to push you around. And so, for example, people can get impatient and they think the impatient is, you know, that's not the meditation, so it must, that's real. So, you know, it's fine to act on the impatience and fidget and move because that's not the meditation. But if you recognize, oh, I'm impatient, then maybe you don't have to move sometimes. So here's a story for you. True story. I was teaching a retreat at a Catholic convent. We'd rented it. It was a beautiful place. And we had this 9 o'clock in the morning meditation session. And there was something really special about that session of meditation. It was maybe the 10th or 11th day of a 2-week retreat. So people had been meditating for a long time. There was a lot of peace and settledness. The light was coming into this room through the glass windows really beautifully. And there was a kind of a November day. It's kind of crisp, quiet day. And the whole room was peaceful, in a palpable peace that was kind of some of the most peaceful places you ever can experience is in a meditation hall with people meditating. And it was just pristine, clear, crisp peace. It was quite something. So that's nice. Right after that, I went to a little room with two chairs to sit there and meet for at a series of what we call interviews, meetings with the practitioners. I was a teacher to kind of talk about what their practice, how it's going. And the first person who came to that meeting with me was a woman who I'd known for a number of years, who was extremely troubled person. And she'd been trying to meditate for many years, but just a lot of trouble, a lot of psychological issues, a lot of anxiety, a lot of despair, self-despair, a lot of judgment, a lot of anger to people around her, just a lot of stuff going on. And she tried very diligently and doing her best, tried to figure out, find her way with meditation. And she came to that, out of that peaceful meditation, she came and met me in that little room. And for the first time ever, I saw her peaceful. She was so peaceful that she could hardly speak, just like was. And we sat there, just like mutual recognition of this peaceful state, of peaceful people. Nothing needed to happen, nothing needed to be said. Just we were there together. It was just so beautiful. And I felt like I didn't even say hello or how are you, because it was too much, just this strong sense of peace. So that's nice. So then, maybe there was something we did some simple acknowledgement of how it was, peaceful and calm. And then she said, yes, but it was not this way yesterday. You see, yesterday I was really concerned and I was upset and there was troubled and I watched her in front of my eyes turn into this deeply troubled person. And I thought, oh, I'm so sorry. Why did she have to bring yesterday into today? She had a story and a memory about yesterday. that you brought into today, and your whole being changed. So I tell you the story as an example of stories. We tell ourselves stories, and the stories we tell ourselves affects our mood, our emotions, our states, many different things. And so one of the things we're trying to do in meditation is stop telling ourselves stories. And in terms of emotions and mindfulness of emotions, the stories we are telling ourselves can play a big role on the emotions that we're feeling, especially the reactive or afflictive emotions, but all emotions. And you might think that some people want to tell stories because they want to feel alive or they want to feel something by having the emotions. But it's possible to stop the storytelling and have a whole different vitality and sense of meaning arise deep inside that's not dependent on stories. It's also what's interesting is that people who, I don't know what, physiologists, emotionologists, psychologists, who study emotions, make this very interesting claim that emotions only last very brief time, like a couple of minutes at the most. You know, no matter how strong the emotion is, that's their natural lifetime, unless we reignite it, unless we restart. And the primary way we do that is to tell a story. So if we can stop telling the stories in meditation and just be present for what it is, a different kind of unfolding begins happening, and some of the things just begin to fade away, or they fade away into something else. And it's a fascinating journey to go on and to just trust the inner life, be present for it, recognize what's there, and allow, see what wants to come. See what wants to come. And if what wants to come is you were sitting quietly, then you felt irritated, so you allowed it to be, and then I was told just to be non-reactive, not having stories about it, just to feel it. And that grew into murderous rage. Don't succumb to the temptation then to then judge it or criticize it or say something is wrong. Maybe that's what needed to happen. So you feel that for a while. Don't make any stories about it. Just feel it. Be present in the body. And that might unfold to something else. And it'll find its way. Your inner life will find its beautiful way if you make it space for it and allow it to do that. Don't be afraid of what you feel, whether it's wonderful or difficult. But learn to be present. Learn to give lots of space. Stay in the present moment with it. And if there's stories, commentary, arrows, see if you can put those aside. So I hope that makes some sense. And then next week, we'll talk about mindfulness of thinking, so that that also is included as part of the meditation. Until now, it's mostly been about letting go of your thoughts, let go of your thoughts. But in fact, it's possible to actually turn the attention to be inclusive of thoughts, and that's an important step to kind of bring in the full potential of this practice we do here. It's also very interesting that I think the next week, because most people haven't really understood the different elements that make up the thinking, and so it's a whole important part of our life. So there is a handout, a yellow sheet, that kind of reviews, offers a little different perspective on these instructions on mindfulness of emotions today. And also, if you haven't done it yet, by the door, we offer freely here at the center a book that I have called The Issue at Hand, and it's essays on mindfulness practice. Some of it's very the basic instructions. There's a chapter on mindfulness of emotions there, chapters on the kind of mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, and things like that. So it's a blue book. It's by the door. We have lots more if you run out there. You can ask Diana or Max to find them. And Diana and Max, by the way, can answer any question you have about meditation, instructions, what we're doing today. So you're welcome to ask them or to ask me if you want to stay afterwards. Thank you very much.